What you're about to listen to is just a glimpse of what takes place on the weekend. We'd love for you to join us at one of our three locations, Fairfax, Clarksburg, Maryland, or online. For weekend experience information, go to fairfax.cc or download the Fairfax app. We hope you enjoy the sermon.
Good morning to you. Welcome. So glad to have you with us. Those of you who are here and in the great room, and those of you watching online, we're so happy that you have joined us. And before I start, I just want to address a thought that some of you probably are thinking right now, and you're probably saying, are we skipping the sermon and just going straight to announcements, or what's going on? Actually, I'm preaching today, so it's not announcement time. Thank you. Thank you. That there is what I call an act of faith. You've never heard me preach, yet you clap. Thank you. I appreciate that. So for those of you who don't know me, my name is Daniel. I'm the Director of Media and Guest Experience here at Fairfax, and it's such a privilege to be with you today. My job is I get to lead several of our ministry teams here at Fairfax. I oversee the facilities crew, the place that keeps this place nice and clean and just looking good all the time. Our guest experience team and volunteers, they're the ones who greet you at the door, help you find seats in the dark, and just make this the friendliest church in the area. But most of my time I get to spend with our communications team, and they're the ones that are responsible for the visual representation of the church, so our branding, the t-shirts, graphic design, social media, videos, short films, that e-news that you get on Wednesdays at around 8 o'clock. I'm going to ask you a favor. Only 37% of you are opening that right now. Could you just open it? It just makes me look good to my boss. So you don't have to read it. Just open it. Actually, do read it. It's pretty good. And so that's what I get to do. And today I get to preach. So I'm really excited about this. We are in the third week of a great sermon series called Psalms. And 3 weeks ago, Aaron Alice kicked us off. And he talked about praise. And he said that when we cultivate praise into our everyday life, we are able to discover a God who is big enough to trust and close enough to know. And then last weekend, if you were here, it was just this epic Holy Ghost party with Joy Tabernacle and Dr. Michael Waters, and he spoke on lament, and he taught us that even when God is silent, it doesn't mean that he isn't present. And today, I get to speak on Thanksgiving. And this week, my kids asked me, "Hey, Dad, what are you preaching on?" And I said, "Thanksgiving." And my son, who's 7 years old, he looks at me and he says, "Isn't that November?" And I sat him down and I preached this message to him. It's what I call teachable moments as a parent. And when Rod asked me to preach, he gave me the option between praise and Thanksgiving. And I chose Thanksgiving for a couple of reasons. The first one was that it was further along in the series, so it gave me way more time to prepare, so I wanted to be prepared. And the second was that I've been on this journey over the past few years that has helped to redefine the practice of Thanksgiving for me, and so I was feeling pretty confident that I had some good stuff to share. And you know, have you ever felt so confident about something, and then something happens to test that confidence? You ever been there? So I was feeling really confident about my ability to be thankful, and then this event happened that I'm simply referring to as Wichita 2017. And a few weeks ago, a group of us went with Rod to the Church of God convention in Wichita. And the convention itself was great. It was on the way back. We were on the last flight out of Wichita to Chicago so we could come home to D.C. because there are no direct flights. And our flight in Wichita was the last one out. It got delayed several times, which meant we missed our flight in Chicago. And so we get there, I'm grumpy, I'm tired. When I get grumpy, I get a little snarky. And they sent us to customer service, and United's customer service is not moving as fast as I would like it to. There's this long line, and it's kind of like that scene in Zootopia, you know what I'm talking about, where they're like, and I'm like, come on, just move it. And if you've ever been to Terminal 1 there at Chicago's O'Hare, there's this giant dinosaur skeleton right next to customer service. And I look up and I said, I bet that dinosaur was alive when it lined up for customer service. And just wasn't very thankful at the moment. So when I got to the counter, I said, "Hey, just put me on the first flight." She said, it's all booked. I said, I'll take my chances. I'm going to spend the night at the airport. I'll be there first thing in the morning. And she said, all right, there's some cots in Terminal 2. And so I found the cots. And this is where I spent the night, right here. And here's the crazy thing about this area. It's this hallway. And on one side is the entrance to the United Club, which is this fancy place. And then there are all these cots. And so I was going to spend the night over here because I didn't want to be over here. The problem was there's three guys having a snoring contest over here. So I moved over to this side, and I'm sitting there at one of the cots nearest to the entrance. And it was so awkward because as people would walk in with their fancy business suits and their uniforms, they'd look at me with this look of pity like, oh, you poor guy, you're not a member. And I felt like a leper in biblical times. I was like, unclean, unclean, don't come near me. But the weirdest part was when Rod walks into the club and I'm like, hey, take, no, I'm just kidding. That actually didn't happen. That didn't happen. He actually was on an earlier flight. He made it home. He was actually texting me, telling me that I was crazy spending the night at the airport. And so I'm sitting there in the cot and I'm thinking, all right, what do I do now? I've got 6 hours to kill. I know I'm not going to sleep. And I thought maybe I'll liven up the situation and watch the latest season of House of Cards or something. You know, and then as soon as I thought that, I got this other thought in my head, which was, hey, why don't you work on your sermon about Thanksgiving? And so I LOL'd, you know, I laughed out loud, and I thought, good one, God, you got me. It's times like this that you realize that God's got a good sense of humor, and so I did. I actually began to work on this message there on the cots in the bowels of Chicago O'Hare. So the sermon that you're about to hear is birthed there. It's a word from God in my distress in the middle of Chicago's O'Hare Airport. It's always Chicago, right? Midway, O'Hare, it doesn't matter. And anyway, still thankful. And over the past few years, my understanding of Thanksgiving has grown from what I would consider a very basic form of Thanksgiving into a more mature practice rooted in what God has to say about the topic. And by no means have I perfected it. By no means have I mastered it. I'm still growing. I'm still learning. But I want to share some of what I've learned with you. And a few years ago, I was working in D.C. I was working off of K Street. And one summer afternoon, I took lunch in Franklin Square across my office building. And I was sitting there, and I began to take inventory of my life. I don't know if you've ever done this before. And I said, I own that. I possess that, I've acquired that, I've accomplished this, I control that. And as I was taking inventory of my life, I was genuinely thankful and happy for what had happened in my life. You see, I grew up in a family that didn't have many resources. That's a nice way of saying we were poor. I never had the nice shoes. I always got the Kmart brand. I don't know if you've ever had Kmart brand shoes. Those things were lethal as a kid. You'd be running really fast, and you'd turn a corner really sharply, and those plastic soles would just give out on you, and you'd land on your face. They weren't the best. I remember in the winter going to clothing banks for winter jackets. I remember as a kid hearing my parents worry about how they were going to pay the rent, how they were going to pay the bills. And never as a kid did I imagine I would grow up to do what I've done and be to where I've been. Because when you grow up in poverty, the vision for your future is very limited. The area where I grew up in Denver, the neighborhood there, the kids my age, my peers were not very likely to go to college and get a college degree. But by the grace of God, I did. By the grace of God, I did. And it opened up these really big doors for me. And before working here at Fairfax, I used to work for an organization that on a national level was helping kids like me go to college, empowering them to go to school, get an education, live out their God-given purpose through education. And it was so successful that Harvard University partnered with us to do a study on hope. How is it that these kids are going to your program and 6 years later they're going to school, they're graduating from college? How is this happening? And so they partnered with us to do some research on hope. And as a result, I got to meet very important people who wanted the Hispanic community in their area to succeed. So I got to meet mayors, governors, senators, congresspeople, community leaders. And then in 2013, the Obama administration launched this initiative to promote science and technology among students of color. And so they assembled a team of experts and leaders to help them figure out how to best do this. And somehow, I got on that list. Yeah, it was cool. I was there in the White House, this big, beautiful room, this big, beautiful table, and there were names at each seat, and mine was right there. And I got this really cool cup of coffee with the presidential seal. The coffee wasn't great, but the cup was so legit. And I'm surrounded by people I've seen on TV, I've read about. And you know that saying, act like you've been there? I was trying so hard to act like I'd been there. I was like, it's cool, man, it's cool. And I snuck my phone out, I took a picture and I put it right back. I didn't want people to see that because I was trying to act cool. But I had this moment in that situation where I was like, wow, I've come a long way from that poor neighborhood in Denver to right here, the center of power of the world. I'm in the White House. I'm an expert. Have you ever had one of those moments where you wish you had a time machine, you can just go back in time? And it was one of these moments where I was like, man, I wish I could go back to high school, find myself, and I would say, hey, dude, got good news for you. Two things I want to share with you. Number one, you get married, so don't stress out about that. And she's beautiful, so don't stress out. Number two, one day you're going to get invited to the White House as an expert on something, all right? And my mind would have been blown because I would never have expected that for myself. And so one of the challenges for my wife and I is to make sure that our kids who don't know the struggle, who don't know what it's like to be poor, who don't know what it's like to struggle with poverty, to cultivate in them a sense of thanksgiving. And so we use moments in life to kind of reinforce this sense of gratitude. And earlier this year, after my son had this huge accomplishment, I rewarded him by taking him to a monster truck rally in Baltimore. And I don't know if you've ever been to a monster truck rally. It's a once-in-a-lifetime thing. Like, you go and you're like, never doing that again. But I was so excited because I had a flashback. As we're walking towards the arena, I have this flashback to fourth grade when all my friends, it seemed like, they all had this toy that I really wanted. It was a toy monster truck called Bigfoot. Anybody remember Bigfoot? I see some hands in the air. That's right, Bigfoot. And Bigfoot was coming to town, and I wanted to go so badly, but I knew my parents couldn't afford it, so I didn't even bother asking. And so here I am years later. I'm all giddy, walking towards the arena, holding my son's hand. I'm like, hey, buddy, you should be so thankful because you're blessed. You're going to this monster truck rally. I wanted to go when I was a kid, but I never could. And I could tell that as we're walking, he's processing. And a few steps later, he looks at me and he says, you didn't get to go? Is that because cars weren't invented yet? Sometimes the lessons get through, sometimes they don't. It's a work in progress. But if you're anything like me, you've got this internal inventory system where you tally everything up, and that's mine, that's mine. It's my car, it's my house, my job, my accomplishments, my possessions, the things I own, the things I control. And it's good to take inventory of our lives and to be thankful for what we have. But if we're honest, I would have to say that this is the most basic form of Thanksgiving, because the challenge with this form of Thanksgiving is that when the inventory gets low, the Thanksgiving can quickly turn into complaining. And I know this firsthand because early in our marriage, when my wife was in grad school and we were on one income and we were struggling to pay the bills, I was complaining so much to God. I was comparing our situation to the situation of other people and asking why. Why aren't we blessed? Why aren't we blessed like them? Why are we struggling? And it just was a lot of complaining. And it's human nature to complain when there's loss. I think that's just the default. Although there are people who are wired to be cheerful in all situations. Do you know anybody like that? Yeah? And we hate them, right? That's not true. We love them. But most people, when there's loss, there's this tendency to complain because it's so easy in those moments to take our eyes off of God and place them on what we've lost, place them on the situation that's right in front of us. And there's this classic example of this happening in the Bible. And when you read it, it's just so ridiculous, but you can't be too hard on the people because we've done this ourselves at times. And it's a time when Moses had, through the power of God set the people of Israel free from generations of slavery in Egypt. God, through a series of supernatural events, caused the Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, to let them go. And so now they're on their way out. And the Bible says that as they're leaving, their former slave masters, the Egyptians, give them gold and silver and clothes. They went from having nothing to having a lot. And now they're on their way to the promised land, a place where they're going to live in houses they never built. They're going to harvest vineyards they never planted. They're going to take riches they never earned. All they have to do is go through this desert. And usually isn't that the case. Before we get to the promise, there's always this difficulty that tests us. But they were complaining and complaining. And then in Numbers 11, verse 1, it says, "Now the people complained about their hardships in the hearing of the Lord, and when he heard them, his anger was aroused. Then fire from the Lord burned among them and consumed some of the outskirts of the camp." It kind of gives you an idea of how God feels about complaining. "The rabble with them began to crave other food, and again the Israelites started wailing and said, 'If only we had meat to eat. We remember the fish we ate in Egypt at no cost.'" It was free. I guess if you don't count being a slave, then yeah, it was at no cost. All you can eat buffet. And here's where this complaint just falls apart for me. Like, I'm with them with the meat. I get that. I love me a good steak. If you ever want to treat me to a steak, do that. But here's where it falls apart for me. "Also, we remember the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, and the garlic." I don't know what leeks are, but that's a salad that they just described. And no one loves salad that much. And I think this is why God was upset. He's like, "All right, too much with the salad. That's where I'm angry. I'm going to burn some stuff." And they say, "But now we've lost our appetite. We never see anything but this manna." Manna was heavenly bread that God miraculously caused to appear every day to feed them. The Bible calls it bread of angels. All they had to do was step outside, scoop it up, eat it, and that's it. And they were complaining. They were so focused on what they didn't have that they completely missed the supernatural that was taking place all around them. They were doing it wrong. And did you know that we can do things incorrectly for years and not even realize it? Simple things like breathing. It wasn't until last year that I learned that I wasn't breathing correctly because I bought an Apple Watch. And it's got this app, it's called the Breathe app, and it comes up several times throughout the day. It just pops up, and it tells you, "Do you want to breathe?" So I would just hit dismiss because I thought that was so dumb. I'm like, if I'm not breathing, this app isn't going to help me. It's not like I'm going throughout my day like, "All right, I submitted that project, I've got this deadline, what am I missing? Oh, breathe, right?" It's kind of ridiculous. But then I realized that there's all this research that shows that when you take deep breaths throughout the day, it helps to reduce stress and anxiety. It lowers blood pressure. It increases blood flow. It makes you feel happier. Like, there's all these benefits to deep breathing. And so I realized I had been doing it wrong. And what if there's a deeper form of thanksgiving that's not based on the inventory of things we have or possess? And this is where the wisdom and instruction of the Psalms comes to the rescue. There's this point in David's life when he's older and he's lost it all. His third oldest son, Absalom, has overthrown him and taken the throne. Absalom, for a long time, held a grudge against his father because of David's lack of action in a serious family matter. And so the Bible says that he conspired against David. He won the hearts of the men of Israel. And then he led a rebellion, and he took the throne, and now his dad is on the run. David is running and fleeing for his life. His army is scattered. He's alone. He's in despair. And he begins to write in the middle of this despair. And in Psalm 69, verse 1, he says, "Save me, O God, for the waters have come up to my neck. I sink in the miry depths where there is no foothold. I have come into the deep waters, the floods engulf me. I am worn out calling for help. My throat is parched. My eyes fail looking for my God." My eyes fail looking for my God. "Those who hate me without reason outnumber the hairs of head, the hairs of on my head. Many are my enemies without cause, and those who seek to destroy me." And this would be my modern translation of it. He's saying, God, right now life sucks. Where are you in all of this? And let me just say a word about the difference between a complaint and a lament, because I think to the casual observer, they both look very similar. But a complaint lacks a sense of hope and trust. It's just whining for the sake of whining. Whereas a lament is an authentic expression of despair filled with a genuine sense of trust and hope in God. And then he says in verse 13, but I pray to you, Lord, in the time of your favor, whenever you're ready, God, at your convenience, trust begins to appear in the picture. In your great love, O God, answer me with your sure salvation. And now there's hope. Rescue me from the mire. Do not let me sink. Deliver me from those who hate me, from the deep waters. Do not let the flood waters engulf me, or the depths swallow me up, or the pit close its mouth over me. Answer me, Lord, out of the goodness of your love, and in your great mercy, turn to me. So here's David crying out in the middle of his lament. His internal inventory is pretty low. He's lost his kingdom, his palace, his possessions, his concubines. His son now sits on the throne. Some of his friends have joined the rebellion. He's alone and fleeing for his life. He feels overwhelmed by the flood waters of life. He feels like he's in the pit of despair and it's about to swallow him whole. And one of the things that I really enjoy about the Psalms is how authentic and raw they are, because they are a reflection of true life. I've been in the pit before, and I know you have as well. And maybe you're there today, and maybe you can relate. Maybe it's a financial situation. Maybe it's your marriage. Maybe it's a doctor's report. Maybe it's a situation with your child. But then in the middle of this despair, the psalmist turns a corner and starts to head in a different direction. And this is where it gets really good, because he says in verse 29, but as for me, he's making a decision, but as for me, afflicted and in pain, may your salvation, God, protect me. In spite of my pain, in spite of my affliction, here's what I'm going to do. I will praise God's name in song and magnify him with thanksgiving. Magnify him with thanksgiving. Magnify him with thanksgiving. The poor will see and be glad. You who seek God, may your hearts live. And there's just so much good stuff here, and I want to spend a few minutes just unpacking it and breaking it down. And here's one thing that David hasn't lost. He's lost a lot of stuff, but he hasn't lost his understanding of God's salvation and faithfulness. The reason the psalmist can step out by faith and thank God for his sure salvation is because he's got a lifetime of God moments, times when God stepped in and saved the day. And at this point in his life, David has a mountain of evidence of God's faithfulness and sure salvation going back to when he was a teenager. He can look back when he was a kid and God saving him from the lion and the bear, God delivering Goliath to him, God delivering him from the Philistines, God delivering him from jealous King Saul, God giving him the enemies of Israel, God's grace and redemption in the whole Bathsheba affair. He's got a mountain of evidence that God is faithful. And I bet if you were to take a minute or two to reflect on all the God moments, all the times God has showed up in your life, you could create a sizable list. And my wife is really good at this. She keeps these prayer journals dating back to when she was a teenager. Times that God has shown up, she writes down her prayers, she writes down her requests, and then when God answers, she writes in the answer and the date. And these go back to when she was a teenager, and I'm actually in here. I am an answered prayer. We were reading these this week in preparation for this, and she says, oh, you're in here. And she says, it says, dear God, thank you for Daniel. He is so patient. And then she says, obviously, that was before we got married. I think there's a prayer in here that says, Daniel needs more patience, God. It's after marriage. But there's other moments that if we hadn't written them down, we probably would have forgotten, like this one, answered prayer, school bill paid. Thank you, Lord. I remember that. I remember stressing about that grad school bill that was coming up, and we were struggling. We didn't know how we were going to do it. We've got this sonogram of our first pregnancy. And we remember the doctor telling my wife, it's a high-risk pregnancy. There's a likelihood that you're going to lose the child. So we took this, we put it into the mountain of evidence, and the answer to that prayer is sitting right here in the front row today. Yeah. You see, I've learned that the inventory list that really matters, it's not comprised of the things I possess, the things I've accomplished, the things I control. It's this list of God moments, this mountain of evidence. Because the truth is, no matter how much you have, and if we were to be honest, there are people here who have way more than others. But in the light of eternity, all of our possessions mean nothing. We are truly poor and impoverished in the sight of God. But thankfully, we serve a God who is rich in mercies. And here's the beauty of God's salvation. It extends beyond the saving of our souls into the mundane details of our everyday life. When we were struggling as a young couple, I was complaining because I was convinced that God only cared about saving my soul and not the details of my life. I thought I was responsible to figure everything else out. But when I realized that his salvation extends into the details of everyday life, it allowed me to see the true beauty of salvation. And so David goes on in verse 30, and he says, I will praise God's name in song and magnify him with thanksgiving. The poor will see and be glad. So what does it mean to magnify God? God, by definition, is eternal. He's infinite. How do you magnify that which is eternal and infinite? Does it mean that we somehow can make him bigger? Kind of. And here's what I mean. Now, by no means am I an expert in photography, but I've learned a lot from Kevin Goldfarb, who's our photographer and one of our graphic designers. And I've learned that you can take a picture in a setting that has plenty of light, but if your settings on the camera are all wrong, it's going to look just like this. And I love this picture. This picture was taken by Valeria Vargas, our awesome summer intern. And I love this picture because I think it captures the essence of David's lament and his despair. There's darkness, there's mystery, there's uncertainty, there's a lack of clarity. You can't quite make out what it is. But if you make some adjustments to your settings, you can increase the amount of light, and now your picture looks a little different. Same picture, more light. Same picture, more light. And with some more adjustments, you can bring the background into focus, and now it looks like this. And you can clearly see the entire picture. No more fear, no more mystery, no more darkness, just light and clarity. And I think that what David is saying is that thanksgiving in a spiritual sense works just like this. It takes us from darkness to light to clarity. It creates room for God to enter into the picture, to enter into our lament, into our despair. It enlarges our ability to see God even when he is silent. It enlarges our ability to see a present God even when he is silent. And sometimes it's the knowledge of his presence that makes all the difference. Remember what he said in verse 3? He said, my eyes fail looking for my God. I've strained my eyes looking for you, and now they're failing, now they're closing. Was God not there all along? He was. He just couldn't see him. But through the act of thanksgiving, through the act of faith, he was able to magnify God and allow light into a situation. And when we do this, we can focus our eyes from what we have to who has us. And it's at this point when we have clarity to see God, that we see him as the one in control and not the situation itself. The situation itself is no longer in control. 3 years ago, our son, Elam, who was 7, he was 4 at the time, he was diagnosed with an anxiety-based disorder called selective mutism. He just wasn't talking to teachers, to his peers. And in the process leading up to the diagnosis, we were There were times of fear. There were times of despair as a dad who wants to fix everything. I couldn't. And there were some scary terms getting thrown at us. We didn't know what was going on. And my wife and I made a decision right up front. We're going to take this. We're going to put it among all the mountain of evidence that we have of God's faithfulness and God's salvation. And we're going to just pray. And so I began to teach my son scriptures about God's power, God's strength. And every morning before going to school, we would recite our verse, and we would pray, and we would thank God for his presence with my son. And last year in first grade, he made some huge progress. We didn't know about it at first because he'd come home, and we'd say, "Hey, buddy, how was school?" And he would say, "Good." And I can't really blame him because when I get home from work and my wife says, "How was work?" I say, "Good." So he's kind of like me. We found out from his teachers, though, that he was making presentations in class. He was speaking to his classmates. And we said, "Buddy, what changed?" And he said, "I can be brave because I know God is with me." The anxiety is still there. He hasn't been healed from anxiety. It's still there. But you know what else is there in his heart? God. And my son at 7 years old has this great faith in a God who can move mountains. And then David says this in verse 32, "You who seek God, may your hearts live." Earlier, when David was sinking in the pit, which is a euphemism for death, he was calling out for God. But now that God's in the picture, it's all changed, because where God is, there is life. And where there is life, there is joy, even in the middle of a lament. And there's a growing body of research confirming that the practice of gratitude can have dramatic and lasting impacts on the lives of people. A study by Dr. Robert Emmons showed that gratitude can lower blood pressure, improve immune function, facilitate more sleep or efficient sleep, reduces lifetime risk for depression, anxiety, and substance abuse, is a key resiliency factor in the prevention of suicide. Thanksgiving literally brings our hearts to life spiritually and physically. And so I ask you today, what area of your life needs an infusion of thanksgiving, even if it hurts? Where do you need to see God's light that consumes the darkness? If we can boil it all down to just one statement, I believe the psalmist is telling us that through the spiritual act of thanksgiving, through this powerful act of faith, we can see God even in the most painful and challenging and dark situations that we find ourselves in, because he is always there. We just need to magnify him. And let me just say a word about difficult situations, because I don't believe that God is asking us to be thankful for the bad situations. I don't think he's asking us to be thankful for the difficulties, for the hardships, for the bad situations and the horrible things in life, because I don't believe those things are his will. I don't think in his perfect creation he planned for those. It's a product of sin. It's a product of a broken world. And I don't think he's asking us to be thankful for those things. I think he's asking us to be thankful in spite of those things, and to trust and have faith and just let him be God so that he can be glorified in those situations. And so today I want to encourage you to do a couple of things before we leave. Number one, if you don't have one of these yet, I want to encourage you to start a prayer journal. Just put it on your phone, buy one of these. And as you have requests to God, write them down. And when God answers, because he will, write it down. And you can create your own mountain of evidence of a faithful God that can be counted on. And let this be your new inventory list, an eternal inventory list, because our earthly inventory lists, they go up and down, they decrease, they increase, but this one only gets better and it lasts forever. And this is the one that we can base our thanksgiving on. I also want to encourage you to become a psalmist today. The psalmist, he would write down his deepest laments, his deepest despairs, and then he would accompany that with a song of thanksgiving. So today, whatever your despair is, whatever your lament is, whatever your challenge is, whatever your situation is that you're facing, and you need the God of light to come into the picture, the God of salvation to enter into the situation, write that down. Near the crosses, there are post-it notes and there are pencils. Write it down and take it to God by faith. And if you haven't received God's gift of salvation, I want to give you that opportunity today to say yes to Jesus. He offers you this gift of salvation. And when we receive a gift, the thing we do when we receive this gift is we automatically say thank you, because there's nothing we could do to earn it. And so if you do that today, we want to know about it. We want to celebrate with you. All we ask is that you write your name, your email address, and the words "I have decided" and place it on the cross. And if you would like someone to pray with you, there are going to be people at each of the crosses that would love to do so. Will you stand with me? God's presence is in this place. His joy, His Spirit is here. And He invites us to enter in. He invites us to let the light of His love, the light of His power, shine through the darkness. And here's how we do it. The psalmist helps us out with this as well. In Psalms 100, he says, "Enter His gates with thanksgiving and His courts with praise. Be thankful unto Him and bless His name." Can we do that today? Can we enter into His presence with thanksgiving and to His courts with praise? Will you join me in just clapping for God, and let's worship together.